Tim Harlow preaches for the Tinley Park Christian Church in Chicago, and he wrote a good book called Life on Mission about how churches can do the one job we've been assigned, representing Jesus well. And in his book, he lists five action steps from Scripture for people following Jesus to focus on. Last week, we talked about the first thing that we as a church need to be doing, which is connecting with people. We need to be where people are. Jesus was always with people. He was often with the wrong people, but he was always with people. And some Christians aren't very good at that. Some Christians tend to hang together a lot. Some tend to shy away from going where there aren't lots of the right kinds of people. But to live a life on mission, we must deliberately, intently, regularly hang out with people who don't do Jesus at all. We need to think about and work at and make a habit of being with people who are far from God. So our action step from last week's sermon was summarized in this way. Go to more parties. Go hang out with people. Harlow tells about meeting some Christians in a Kentucky airport once, and they were talking for a while, and he gave them one of his books. He gives his books away to anybody who he thinks will read them. And eventually he asked this couple, he said, so what are you doing at this airport? And they said, well, we're going to Mexico. And he said, ooh, that's nice, going by yourselves? They said, no, actually, and please pray for us. The couple said, we're going to Mexico with friends. We're going with two other couples who are not Christians. They said, we love these people. We go to ballroom dancing with them. And we decided that we would try to vacation together. So we're going to Mexico with them. Harlow said, okay, when you read my book, just skip the whole first section. That part about connecting, you've got that figured out. Very good. These people were connecting with their friends in a really good and a really warm way. They were going to their friend's party, and hey, if you got to go to Cancun for the sake of the gospel, okay, go. You need to do what you need to do to connect with people in your life, because we can't help anybody that we're not talking with. Step one is connect. And I think our church does that really well. We're in schools, we're in local gyms, we're in fire departments, we're in a bunch of leagues, we're in musicals. We are where people are. We are a pretty well-connected group. So today is the next part, step two, which is serve. Step two is help people. Once you're connected, make their lives better. Our ultimate goal is to introduce people to Jesus and help them get better acquainted. And the way to do that is to connect with them, to be where they are, to be in their lives, and then to help them in their lives, to serve them, to do good where you can, to help people. The famous quote from Theodore Roosevelt is, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And people can tell we care because we're there with them, helping them. Which brings us to today's event from Jesus' life, which is one of my all-time favorites. In John chapter 9, it starts out by saying, as Jesus went along, he saw a man blind from birth. A man blind from birth. This man, think about it, had never seen anything. He had never seen his parents. He had never seen the ocean. He had never seen someone smile. He had never seen mountains. He'd never seen clouds. He'd never seen the color red. He was blind from birth. People born blind miss out on lots of stuff that most of us enjoy every day without even thinking about. And when they saw this man blind from birth, verse 2 says, his disciples asked Jesus, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? It was commonly assumed back then and today that God must not be on the side of people who are suffering. Back then, they said, how could a good God allow something bad like this to happen to this man? They figured somebody must have done something wrong, and God / karma was punishing whatever had been wrong. But Jesus knew that that was not the truth about his Father in heaven. And Jesus said, nope, you guys do not see things like they really are, but you will in a minute. We're talking today about the value of serving. Watch Jesus do this in a big way. In John chapter 9, verse 6, it says, after saying this, Jesus spit on the ground, made some mud with the saliva, and put it on the man's eyes. Then he said, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is a word that means scent. So the man went, and he washed, and he came home seeing. Sometimes people whose bodies are not right suddenly heal themselves, and that's good. Sometimes people sell oils and leaves and soil, and they say things have curative properties in the right mix, and if you use these, you can get better, and that's good. I had a friend who just this past week had a successful cataract surgery, and he can see again, and that's good. But this guy had been blind from birth. He had never seen anything ever. And Jesus spits on the ground and he makes some mud and he plasters it on this guy's face and he says, go wash that off. And the man did what Jesus said and he came back seeing. I don't know how that happened. John doesn't say how that happened, but Jesus somehow made this man's life way better. He connected with the blind man and then he helped the blind man. I wonder what it was like when that guy washed the mud off of his eyes and he saw the Pool of Siloam for the first time ever. Or when he walked home without a cane, without a seeing eye dog, seeing people and houses and trees. We don't know what it was. I can't wait to hear him tell the story someday. What we do know is how people around him reacted when he came back. In verse 8, it says, his neighbors and those who had seen him begging said, isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg? Some claimed he was. Others said, no, he only looks like him. But he himself insisted, I am the man. Jesus often did things that made other people around him go, whoa, what just happened here? This blind man, his whole life blind, had made it through his life because of other people's kindness. These people knew him. They had helped him every day. They'd given him money. They'd given him food. He was blind. But now they can see him, and they can see that he sees them. And they're confused. Some of them said, hey, look, that's the blind guy. And the other people said, what, are you blind? That can't be the blind guy. He's not blind. And they're arguing back and forth. And the blind guy's watching them argue back and forth. And he says, no, it's really me. And they said, it can't be you. You're not blind. Sometimes you just know who people are because of the clues. There's a guy in Detroit. His name is Reggie Harding. He's 6'11". He grew up in Detroit. He played for the Detroit Pistons. He's freakishly tall. Growing up, though, he was in a gang, and this gang decided to rob some convenience store near where they lived, and they did it 3 times in a row. And the last time, Reggie came in with a couple other regular-sized guys from the gang. They were all wearing ski masks. They were all holding guns. And Reggie went up to the counter, towering above the guy at the counter, and he said, give me your money. And the guy working that night said, Reggie, I know it's you. Don't do this. And Reggie said, no, man, you're wrong. It ain't me. Now give me the money. The used-to-be-blind guy said, it's really me. And the neighbor said, no, man, it ain't you. And he said, yes, it is. It's me. I know. I'm the guy. I once was blind, but now I see. In verse 10, they said, how then were your eyes opened? And he replied, the man they called Jesus made some mud, and he put it on my eyes, and he told me to go to Siloam and wash. And so I went, and I washed, and then I could see. And they asked him, where is this man? And he said, I don't know. He didn't know where Jesus was. He didn't even know what Jesus looked like because they had met back in his BS days. That's before sight. But he knew what happened. He just didn't know who did it. Jesus had helped him. His life was now better. Jesus had served this guy and met some needs. And if that was the end of the story, that would be a great story. But there's more. In verse 13 of chapter 9 of John, it says, they brought to the Pharisees the man who had been blind. Now, the day on which Jesus had made the mud and opened the man's eyes was a Sabbath. Therefore, the Pharisees also asked him how he had received his sight. And he said, he put mud on my eyes, and I washed, and now I see. Some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath. But others asked, how can a sinner perform such signs? So they were divided. Then they turned again to the blind man, and they said, what have you to say about him? It was your eyes he opened. And the man replied, Jesus is a prophet. For most part, the people who were in the Pharisee club back then did not like Jesus because he would not follow their rules. For example, Jesus gave the blind guy sight on the day of the week that the Pharisees had declared no miracles allowed on this day. They really said that. For most people, they said, you are not allowed to work on this day. But for Jesus, they said, you are not allowed to work miracles on this day, which is kind of a silly rule to put in place. But they made that rule. And Jesus broke it, and it made him mad. It just made him mad because he didn't act like he needed to listen to them. And they said, clearly, this man is not with God because he keeps doing things on Saturday that we do not permit. But some Pharisees who were more honest with the evidence said, well, he does some pretty cool things. You got to give him that. So they asked the blind man what he thought, and he said, I'm thinking God must be on Jesus' side because of what he does. In verse 18, they still didn't believe that he had been blind and received his sight until they sent for the man's parents. And they said, is this your son? Is this the one you say was born blind? How is it that he can now see? And the parents answered, "We know he is our son, and we know he was born blind. How he can now see, and who opened his eyes, we don't know. Ask him. He's of age. He can speak for himself." The parents were afraid of what the Pharisees would do to them if they answered the question wrong. John tells us that the Jewish leaders had told everybody that anybody who was on Jesus' side was not going to be okay by them. So the mother and father are ecstatic over what Jesus has done for their son, but they're also terrified of the Pharisees at the same time. So they played it middle of the road. They said, "Yep, that's our boy. Yep, we were there. He was born blind. How he sees now. The parents said, "Did you hear that joke, the one that goes, what do you call a deer with no eyes? A no idea?" They said, "We got no idea how our son can see, but he's over 30, so you could ask him yourselves." So the Pharisees did. In verse 24, it says, a second time, they summoned the man who had been blind. "Give glory to God by telling the truth," they said. "We know that this man, Jesus, is a sinner." And the guy said, whether he's a sinner or not, I don't know. One thing I do know, I was blind, but now I see you. We've talked about how Jesus calls us all to be witnesses, to just say what we know about him, not to argue with people, not to do theology, not to convict people of their wrongness. We're just supposed to say what we know. So this formerly blind guy who'd probably been outside watching birds fly in the sky for the first time ever came back in when he was called, and he listened to the Pharisees' explanation of the miracle, and he said, "Well, that's an interesting take you guys have. You guys certainly can assert any version of reality that you see fit. All I know is what I know, and what I know is I used to not be able to see you, but now I'm looking at you, and you've got one finger up. What does that mean? This guy's great. All his life he's been viewed at the bottom rung on the evolutionary ladder, and now he's just standing up to the highest people around." In verse 26, they asked him, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" And the blind man answered, "I have told you already and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciple too?" They clearly don't. They're trying to trap this guy. They're trying to make themselves feel better about whole. They're trying to win. But he says, "You guys keep asking questions about Jesus. You want to follow him too?" Which of course made them furious. So they threw him out on his ear. Which was okay, because when he landed face first on the ground, he looked up and he saw flowers for the first time. And he said, "Flowers, you got to be kidding me. Those are beautiful." And then he saw someone standing behind the flowers, looking at him. In verse 35, it says, Jesus heard they had thrown him out, and when he found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" And the blind guy said, "Who is he, sir? Tell me that I may believe in him." Jesus said, "You have now seen him. In fact, he is the one speaking with you." Then the man said, "Lord, I believe," and he worshiped him. Jesus said, "For judgment I have come into the world, so that the blind will see, and those who see will become blind." We're going to talk next week about talking with people about Jesus. How to do that. How to fight your way through the scariness of actually saying something about Jesus. But here's today's point. After Jesus connected and served this guy, the guy ended up worshiping him. This week's action step is, once you connect, help people, serve them, make their life better. And before we talk about real life ways that you can do that, do you have time for a footnote? I have a short footnote here. A footnote. Like the 12 people in the story, many people don't understand what's going on around them in life. They say, "Who sinned, this man or his parents?" And Jesus said, "Nope, you guys are asking the wrong questions." The point of John chapter 9 is, the way to get people to see truth about God is through serving them. Instead of telling them, Jesus helped the guy and they all learned the truth. Jesus served and the truth was known. And when you serve, people will see God as he really is. And then they will always respond in one of three ways. When you serve and people see God in you, they will respond in one of three ways. Some people, like the Pharisees, will see God through your acts of service. But since God is not what they want, they will deny what happened. They cannot stand the possibility of God making you better, so they'll dismiss what you do. They'll make up reasons to explain away why you're helping them. You're on a power trip, or you're on a guilt trip, or you need a crutch, or you're repressing your sexuality, or you didn't really even help me. They don't want what you do to be because God inspired you to do that, so they come up with stuff about what you did. And they walk away knowing that they're right and you're not. Some people will react like that when you try to help. Some people, like the parents, will see the good deeds, the good acts, the help that you give. They'll see the truth of it, but they'll be afraid of the consequences and they'll back away. They feel safer not going where the evidence leads them, so they don't want to go there. Sometimes people will realize that if they acknowledge God as real, as for real, that would change things in their lives. If they said that God actually was there and was on their side, then they'd have to give up some habits or some money or some time or a grudge. It'd be uncomfortable if this Jesus stuff was really real, so they just opt out. Soren Kierkegaard said, "The Bible is very easy to understand, but we pretend like we don't understand it because we know very well the minute we do, we're obligated to act accordingly." Sometimes people hang out with churches for a while, and then they disappear for a long time. Not because they weren't getting it, because they were. And it scared them to death. Some people deny the goodness of Christians helping them. Some people back away from helpful Christians because sometimes acts of kindness by followers of Jesus can change things, and they don't like that. But some people will change for good. If you serve them, if you connect with them, if you help them, they will see Jesus and change for good. Some people, like the blind man, will see the service that you give and have their eyes opened. And there will be much rejoicing. You can help people be better in life. And they will rejoice like a blind man seeing for the very first time. That's what we're shooting for. End of footnote. Here are some ways that we can do that. We obviously can't do what Jesus did. We can't give sight to people who've never seen. We can't even make life easy. Although I did hear a guy say recently, he said, if parents would stop naming their daughters Karen, if they'd stop naming their daughters Karen, eventually we wouldn't have a care in the world. Sorry. We just can't make stuff go away for people, but we can serve them and meet physical needs, like when your friend gives birth or your friend has surgery and you take a meal over to help because it's hard after surgery. Or when you watch your friend's kids one evening because your friends need that, or you sit with someone's aging parent just to give them a break. When you carry books for a classmate who's on crutches that day. When you help carry boxes for a family that's just moving in. When you're willing to check on the dogs when a family is away from home, when you shovel a driveway for an elderly neighbor, we can physically help people. We can meet physical needs. We're talking about a lifetime of serving. Meeting the needs in physical needs in one primary way is you can serve people that way, but it's not the only way. We can't give sight to the blind like Jesus did, but we can serve people by meeting their emotional needs as well, being present. Letting people talk, praising the good in their life, supporting them through pain. For instance, when they're splitting up, you can invite your friend over to your house if he needs a place to stay for a night. Or when his kid is on drugs and choosing to do so much wrong in life, you can listen to your neighbor. Or when your friend loses her job, you can keep meeting with her for lunch on a regular basis and cheering for her as she tries to find something new. When somebody in your group finds out it's terminal, you can cry together. And each of those acts of service is like helping somebody to see. Tony Campolo tells about the time that his mother called him to tell him that Mrs. Kilpatrick had died. Tony says, this dear woman, Mrs. Kilpatrick, had lived on his street in West Philadelphia while he was growing up. She had taken him to the art museum, to the concert, to everything he'd learned about culture he had learned from Mrs. Kilpatrick. And the mother called and said, Tony, the least you can do is show some respect for Mrs. Kilpatrick by going to her funeral. And Tony Campolo was in his 50s, but he said, if you're Italian and if your mother tells you you have to do something, then you have to do it. So he went. And he got to the funeral right as it was supposed to start. And he rushed in, and he looked around, and he saw that he was the only one there with the exception of a little old lady sitting in front. And he went up, he said, I went up, and I looked in the casket, and I could tell immediately that the man in the casket was not Mrs. Kilpatrick. And he said, I was just about to leave when the old lady grabbed my arm, and she said, you were his friend, weren't you? And Tony said, what would you do? Say, no, sorry, ma'am, I'm in the wrong room. I didn't know your husband. It doesn't look like he had any friends. So he said, no, I did what you all would have done. I lied. I said, yes, he was a good man. And I sat through the whole service with her. And since I was the only one at the service, I had to go to the graveside with her. And on the way back, he said, Mrs. King, I want to be your friend, but I've got to be honest with you. I didn't know your husband. I came to this funeral by mistake. And she took his hand and said, you'll never know how much your being with me today has meant to me. We all need somebody on our side, somebody who will sit with us when it's hard. Maybe we're not that desperate right now, but everybody needs emotional support. We're talking about a lifetime, a lifestyle of serving people. We can meet people's relational needs. God said it's not good for a man to be alone. We can serve, we can meet needs, we can be part of helping people know Jesus if we'll just do good stuff in life. Do you know why hamburgers taste better in outer space? Hamburgers in outer space, they taste better because they're meatier. And the second step to being helpful in life and getting people to heaven is to live meatier lives, to be more helpful than we've ever been before. When we've talked about what it takes to do the things that Christians are supposed to do to help other people go to heaven, I've heard lots of people say when we get to this point, well, I can do the serving. Serving's the easy part. I can help people. That's fine. It's talking that's really hard. The serving part, that's no sweat. Serving's cake, I've been told. To which I reply, are you crazy? Serving is incredibly hard. To not be self-centered, to give yourself up for the good of everybody else, to give up your comfort, your convenience, to pour out your life so that other people can have it better, that's crazy hard. It goes against every selfish inclination inside us. It's unnatural. It's way easier not to serve people. Most people don't even notice other people having needs. To choose to be uncomfortable, to try to make a difference. Helping is not the easy part. It's the amazing part. It's the like God part. The story that Ken read for us before, the story that Jesus told about helping. What is the title of that story? Do you remember the story he read? And the title that we always say is The Good Samaritan. Okay, the Good Samaritan, when Jesus told the story, was an oxymoron. It's like two words that don't go together. It's like jumbo shrimp. It's like government assistance. It's like good country music. It's like, it's an oxymoron, like undefeated Bills. But the most surprising part of Jesus' story wasn't even that the Samaritan helped. That was surprising, but that was not the most surprising part. When people listen to the story, the most surprising part was that the religious guys didn't. Jesus told that story as an answer to the question from a religious guy who said, well, yeah, I know you're supposed to help your neighbor, but who, really, who's my neighbor? And the two guys in the story had to go out of their way not to help. They had to cross the road not to step on the injured man. I mean, Jesus is almost telling, why did the chicken cross the road here? By the way, why did the turkey cross the road? To prove he wasn't chicken. Why did the chicken cross the road and roll in the mud and cross the road again? Because he was a dirty double crosser. I got one more. Why didn't the bike cross the road? Because it was too tired. Jesus said, why did the religious person cross the street? And the answer is because helping people is hard. If you think giving up your life for the good of others is easy, you're not really trying yet. But even though it's hard, do it. Help people, sacrifice for people in your life, serve people. And Christians have the unique ability to do this because we know we're already good. We don't have to spend our lives trying to prove to ourselves that we're good. We don't have to spend our lives trying to prove that God should favor us somehow. We've got that. We as Christians know that, so we're free to use our lives in giving away goodness to others. We don't worry about ourselves. In fact, that's the only reason anybody can really do good for any other people. It's only when you realize that seeing you serve other people is a delight to God, and that you're doing it as a way to say thank you to him. When your only goal in life is to bring God pleasure and you understand that helping other people does that, that's when you're able to serve other people with no ulterior motives. That's when people will realize that God has done something in you that's amazing. You're just helping them for no good reason. So, Christians ask me, if we help people as a strategy of leading them into a relationship with God so that they can go to heaven, doesn't that mean we're kind of looking at people like projects? Doesn't it kind of make us like we're working on people? Are we supposed to just pretend to be friends with people so we can get them to commit to Jesus? If that's your question, you don't need to really worry about that, because people can smell fake from miles away. And if you really don't care about them, you're never going to be able to help them, ever. But once you start connecting with people, it's really kind of hard not to love them. Because, truth is, people are amazing. God made people in his image. He stamped himself on them, all of them. Did you hear about the guy who said that he's noticed a strange new trend in the office lately? He said this strange new trend, people are now putting names on food in the office refrigerator. He said, yeah, it's kind of weird. Like yesterday I had a tuna fish sandwich named Linda. It's kind of like that. When you understand that God has marked each of us with his own name, that he stamped himself on each person, that we all belong to him. When you see that and you get close enough to see that, you'll see that he has made them with greatness. People are great. And you'll want what's best for them. And what's best for them is to connect with Jesus. If my child was lost and heading for bad, I would do anything in the world I could to get him home, to get her home. And anyway, as Tim Harlow says, I seriously doubt that when we're all hanging out in heaven, anyone's going to come up to you and say, you jerk, I can't believe you tricked me into coming here. I have a friend who used to be part of our church, but he got disillusioned. He said he gave up because nobody really cares about doing what Jesus says. He said, people come on Sundays or not. People get together with others or not. People meet the needs of other people or not, depending on if they got anything better to do. And he was tired about hearing Christians sing and talk and pray about putting God first or not. And while we were talking, I happened to have a bulletin with me, and he picked it up and he opened it up. And it said on the back of the bulletin, he said, things you might want to get in on. And he read it, and it listed that we need help in our nursery and toddlers' rooms, and we need help cleaning the building. And he said, see, there are two things nobody ever wants to do. It just proves my point. And here's my answer. Here's my answer to him and to you. For 19 years and 10 months that we've been in this building, we have had people care for kids. And we have had people clean the building. And we've had people set up chairs every week. And we've had people teach classes. For the 19 years and 10 months we've been in this building, we've had people here lead music and provide food and give money. For the time that we've been here, Willowbrook has hosted community groups. And we've encouraged other churches. And we've supported missionaries around the world. We've helped addicts stay sober. We've helped marriages stay together. We've helped friends be restored, reconciled to each other. For the 19 years and 10 months that we've been in this building, we've baptized people and we've taught God's truth and we've seen people change for good. And God only knows the good that every person in our church has been doing in his own life, in his own world, in our own life. So he looks at our church and he says, you don't look good. But see, the trick is when people look at us, they're not supposed to see us, they're supposed to see through us. It's not about looking at the church, but looking through it. We're kind of like a telescope. You can look at a telescope. You can examine all the parts. You can label all the parts. You can see the telescope. But that's not really what telescopes are good for. A telescope is for looking through. And it's not until you look through it can you see the really cool looking stuff. So when people see us and watch us do stuff, they can say lots of things. But when they look through us, when they see us help people in Jesus' name, Somehow, God can use that to help them see him through us. Matthew 5 says, you are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. Jesus said, you are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. He said, in the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. I'm hoping that my friend will see me and see you serving, and maybe we can help him, and maybe eventually he'll get back in. Now, don't get me wrong. We don't save anybody. We're just witnesses. Jesus is the only one who can really help people, but we start it by helping them. One guy said, I invented gloves. He said, okay, that's an exaggeration, but I did have a hand in it. So truth is, we don't save people. Jesus saves people. That's true, but we do have a hand in it. So let them see you so that ultimately they can see him. Serve. Help people. Connect with them and help them. And watch Jesus change people a few at a time. Let's pray.